Hi friends, I'm Jillian, the host of Teach Me How to Adult, a podcast on all the things you never learned growing up. Between landing your dream job, crushing your love life, learning to invest, mastering your mindset, and figuring out how to be happy along the way, there's a lot to navigate. I've learned firsthand that there's more than one way to adult, and it's not always linear. So consider this show my love letter to taking the unconventional route, creating new milestones, and carving out your own version of success. You're right where you should be. So join me every week as I call in the experts for unfiltered, game-changing advice on how we can all live our best lives. Adulting isn't easy, but we got you. Hi guys, I hope you're doing great. I am here this week with my friend and team member, Caro. Welcome.
Thank you. So excited to be here.
Yeah, and we are just kind of having like a state of the union situation about work and work culture. I recently saw, I don't know if anyone else saw it, but there's like this chart that has been circulating around in Canada of how the public versus private versus self-employed sector is doing. Oh. And the self-employed sector, shockingly, because the gig economy was way up, and it has like dipped down so low this past year that people are just like, yo, are the self-employed people okay? And I can tell you we're not okay. But I'm excited to chat with you today because I feel like you and I have had a lot of experiences across a lot of different ways of working. Mm-hmm. Like we've worked corporate, we have worked in small startups, we have worked freelance, side hustle, self-employed. So we've done all the things.
The whole gambit.
But just to set the foundation, why don't you kind of share like what your background is and what your specialties are with work?
Yes. I've been kind of all over. I feel like even after graduating university, my first job was at like a super small startup. So it's like three of us right in the nitty gritty of it. And I always thought I'd want to work for NGOs, but I very quickly saw the reality of that where we had to close our doors after 8 months of me being there full time. So then I worked for the federal government.
Wow.
Incredibly different. Wow. So I worked at different departments of the government for a few years and then I got into Shopify. So I switched into tech. I now work in like tech design. So from there, I had applied for 2.5 years to Shopify, which is so interesting. So while I was working at the government, I just had this itch that I wanted to work in design. And I just kept like building up my own portfolio. It was like, you know, the booming days of online learning.
Yeah.
And I kept debating, like, should I go back and do a master's in design? And I learned everything on like LinkedIn Learning at the time.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
Good for you for building up that like portfolio for yourself too, because I'm currently hiring for a position and it's my first time hiring anyone. So it's very exciting. And I've been really impressed with the number of people who are like recent grads and they don't have a lot of work experience, but they have sent me portfolios of like mock-ups of things that they do. And like you have to make that for yourself and like teach yourself the gaps. And I even had one person in the email say, hey, I saw you called out SEO as a skill you're looking for. I'm not really formally trained in SEO. I have a general basis, but I'm happy to do this course, and like linked the course so I'm up to speed. And I'm like, wow, impressive.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
I feel like that's like almost how you have to stand out this niche too. But that's always what's worked really well for me, is like showing initiative beyond just your resume.
Yeah.
To exactly that person that had found that SEO course. It's like to show that you're going to go above and beyond and that you're a problem solver.
Yeah.
Like you can figure out so much now, especially with this world of the internet where it's like I taught myself the world of design, which is like quite a technical field.
It's really impressive.
Thank you. You can figure it out. Yeah. Like the information is there. It's all really about like, are you going to be able to take the initiative and be proactive enough and like disciplined enough to like really learn that? And do you have like a growth mindset? And I feel like if you find people like that, like they're going to fill the gaps for you.
Yeah. Especially in like the creative and kind of like marketing and content industries. I feel like some of the best photographers I've worked with are completely self-taught. They like learned off of YouTube. Like they're amazing. Mm-hmm. I was doing a mentorship program before where I was a mentor for people entering the job industry. And I was really surprised by how many people were coming to me asking for connections and having no portfolio, no background, no anything to show. And they're like, yeah, I'd really like love to be a designer at this like top magazine. And I'm like, okay, like let's, you know, could you share your portfolio and I can help point you in the right direction or give you some feedback? Yeah. And like, well, we haven't done any work yet. I'm like, okay, but what about your own project? What about your own mock-ups? Like you need to just make stuff if you ever take that initiative and like teach yourself these things.
Totally.
I was applying to magazine jobs having like made a student magazine with no budget just for fucking fun.
Yeah. And I feel like that can work in so many fields too.
100%. So that kind of speaks to like getting in the door. But then once you're in the door, what do you think the keys to corporate success are these days? Like what's really helped you progress in your career?
It's a million-dollar question right there. A big theme that I've been thinking of recently, and I feel like especially since like being in the tech world where it was like more ambiguous than at the government, it's like very regulated. There's like these different levels you go through in tech or a lot of these other fields where it's like build your own adventure. Mm-hmm. I just feel like being in a mindset of proactivity rather than reactivity is like huge. I think even learning through my career, it sounds pretty negative, but it's like you can't just expect your managers to really set you up for success.
True.
So just like seeking out those things, and instead of feeling like you're a product of your role or the company that you're at, like taking that upon yourself and being like, this is just an opportunity, but I need to figure out exactly what I want to be doing and getting from this opportunity and then seek that out. So even as practically as like when you're starting a new job, setting out like a 90-day goal, like objectives for yourself.
Smart.
And whether that's like, I want to have coffee chats with like 20 people at the company in my first 90 days.
And sometimes your progression in a team might not be linear. You're like, oh, the next step that could take like 5 years. And but so then you can kind of zigzag your way to your next role by understanding the other teams and parts of the business.
Yeah, definitely. That's huge. I mean, especially in the world of working remote now, like it's like getting that visibility and FaceTime and like meeting people, connecting with people. Those relationships will be like what help you more long term. Because even at your current company, it's like that's what will get you on those projects. When you're on the projects, it'll be easier to succeed because you know the people working around you.
Yeah.
I just feel like it makes it so much easier.
It speaks to a conversation I had with a friend recently. It wasn't about work, but now it's reminding me that it applies to work of like, it's very easy to match the relationships or the company that you work with and be like, okay, they put in this much, so I'll put in this much. They communicate this much, I'll communicate this much. And so it's understandable that as humans, we usually kind of like level set with like the norm. Mm. But if you can show up in any work environment as what you deem to be like your best self with your best work, and you set your own benchmarks based on like what you believe to be great work, then you're going to really stand out, because you might go into a really disorganized or poor communication setup company. And then if you match them, you're kind of reducing yourself. I keep trying to approach every relationship and work experience that I have of like, okay, they may not do this, but I want to make sure I'm coming in here doing the thing that I do, which is strong communication and like hitting deadlines and all of the things that I value. So like bringing those values to any of your experiences rather than leveling with what everyone else is doing.
Totally. Yeah, I really love that. If I go into a new opportunity, whether it's like a new team at a company or anything, and I'm like reactive to exactly what they're doing and I'm trying to fit in to that role or that position or that team dynamic or that project, it's like you almost have less boundaries. So it's like your energy is going to get like sucked by the other people around you instead of like bringing in like, this is how I work, these are my processes.
And to your point about fitting in, I feel like when I look back at what I deem as, I don't want to call them failures, but my biggest learnings throughout my career were I operated at my poorest when I was trying to fit in.
Hmm.
And I was like a very junior person in fashion magazines trying to be what I thought I should be in those situations and trying to be like everyone else. And I wasn't like everybody else.
Yeah.
And that could have been my superpower, and I could have brought something to the team that was really valuable instead of trying to like mimic and fail at mimicking what other people were doing and acting like and wearing. And it wasn't a great experience, and I didn't feel like myself. I felt like a shadow of myself, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I think it's really transparent. Like, you can tell when someone is really kind of not being their authentic selves and is just kind of like mirroring what everyone else is doing. So as I have become more confident and certain in myself, I really do show up as myself now. I think it makes a big difference in what you bring, because some of those like soft skills that are really hard to name and that might not go in the job application but are true to who you are, that might be what gets you hired. That might be what makes you like such a big part of a team.
Yeah. I've totally been in that spot as well. And I think those are always like the times when I've just been like least successful, least happy for sure in roles, or when I'm just trying to like, okay, if they just do it this way, like I'll just go along, like being a little follower of the group. Yeah. But it diminishes a lot of those skills that, again, it's like are not my core design skills. But I really think when I look back on the impact that I've had on certain teams, I just have a way with people. I'm like good at fostering like a positive culture on a team.
Yeah.
So it's like the things that my companies have asked me to do, I'm always, I mean, that's also just being the young woman on a team. I'm always organizing the social events and all of those things, which is something I've tried to push back
on. The labor of the like, personality.
I haven't loved that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then even in a more practical way, like I have just always brought up really great feedback on like the culture of meetings and the culture of reoccurring meetings and how we should be structuring them, making sure that like that culture is very delicate, and just like saying like, we shouldn't be doing this. We shouldn't be bloating meetings and sitting there on mute.
Yes.
Big advocate of like that audience just like kills yeah. kills that culture and that conversation and the
Agreed.
The culture of like innovation, especially like in a design review or something. Like, I don't want four people sitting there on mute with their cameras off
no.
while the three of us are really engaged.
Yeah.
Like, just don't come then. Like, that's more than okay. We can share out notes after. So that's a skill that I bring to the team.
I also have been noticing how much we were trained as children and growing up to not challenge the status quo.
Yeah.
And like, I have all of these thoughts and ideas of like, oh, if I question something that's happening, it could be rude. Or if I challenge something, I don't want to be seen as combative. I don't know if that's being a woman or just like being trained that like politeness matters over everything.
Yeah.
But I'm noticing in some of the amazing people I've had the opportunity to work with lately that they challenge stuff.
Yeah.
And they're like, guys, should we be doing it this way? Can I suggest something else? Like, maybe we're mm-hmm. making this more complicated, or maybe we're missing something here. And they challenge everything. They speak up in a polite but collaborative way and yeah. explain why they're doing that. Like, I'm not just trying to be an asshole about it. I just,
yeah.
I think that maybe we're wasting a lot of time here. Could we try something else? And it's inspired me to not accept that things have to be the way they are when I join a team or a company or a project, and that you can question something because maybe you have a different perspective that other people just haven't gotten to be exposed to.
Totally.
And you can bring so much value by doing that.
Totally.
And it's not rude as long as you're not being rude.
Yeah, exactly. As long as you're kind about it. That's so true too. And that's one of my biggest takeaways of like one of my more recent like people that I've considered a mentor is he joined our startup and he was like the challenger, I would say, like in the group.
Yeah.
Challenged everything to the point at the beginning we were like, okay, he's coming out a little strong.
Yeah.
But I have like learned so much about my ways of thinking. And he was so good at saying like, are we even focusing on the right thing? It's so interesting when you're holding back from being inquisitive, usually in a meeting, right? Like
yeah.
for me especially, I sometimes struggle with like the immediate responsiveness of that. Like sometimes I need to be a little bit more thoughtful and take time.
Yeah,
but then
yeah,
the meeting's
yeah.
already like, I'm 15 minutes behind everybody. I'm like, that decision was made. So especially live, like where I find if it's over an email chain or something, I have more time to be a little bit more responsive and I
yeah.
can challenge things more on that. But on the go, I've always been trying to build that muscle where I often don't speak up because it comes from a place of fear of incompetence. Like mm-hmm. I'm always like, they've already thought of this, or did I miss this?
Oh, yeah.
Which is so interesting. I mean, I feel like I never think I'm being rude. I'm always just like looking around the room. I'm like, is anyone else think like this seems obvious to me? But I'm like, I'm sure they've thought about this. Like, I'm not the smartest one in this
yes.
room. Which is so interesting. Because then you were saying as a woman, like, you don't want to be rude, which I've never thought of that.
But, well, yeah, I feel that way 100%. But I've had multiple times recently come up where I had an idea or a thought and it seemed so obvious to me. And
yeah.
I was with people who I considered in these meetings to be like way more advanced in their content careers and all these things. And I'm like, well, I don't want to sound dumb.
Yeah.
Because they've obviously thought of this. This is like a level one idea, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And so I fucking didn't say anything. And then at the end of the meeting, like one of the most senior people in that call was just like, hey guys, just want to throw something else out there. Like, what if we did this? And it was the winning idea and everyone loved it. He's like, I just thought of this. And I'm like, why the fuck didn't I say that?
And they get praise and you're sitting there like.
Because we're making assumptions that if totally. We're thinking of it, it must mean that like everyone has thought of it.
Yeah.
But just fucking say it anyways, because even if everyone else has thought of it and it's a basic idea, it will at least show that you're all on the same page and everyone can agree on something
mm-hmm.
rather than this like filtering that I find myself doing sometimes.
So you always have to balance that too, right? Where it's like, what's the worst case here?
Yeah.
It's like if it actually is kind of something silly or it was missed, like they say, oh, we actually said that and you move on.
Yeah.
Like it's so
yeah.
funny. But it can hold you back from like great innovation and stuff like that too.
That's
right?
really true.
And I mean, I think that comes even to like fostering a culture that is like safe enough too. Like
yeah.
I think I am speaking from like a team dynamic that like is not the closest.
Yeah.
So it's like I wouldn't feel comfortable saying those things. But mm-hmm. I've been on teams before where it's like I would say anything. Especially like a smaller team where you are like collaborating in a room.
Mm.
Like it just matters so much if you like trust each other.
Yeah.
And that openness can really get you far or yeah. can keep you in the shallow end of the ideation pool.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And I find if I'm like feeling a little nervous about how open and how much I should share by like me cheerleading other people's ideas, it then like just creates this compounding openness.
Totally.
So if I'm feeling a bit shy in the first little bit, I'll be super interactive with people's ideas and super supportive, and I'll try to like create that safe energy so that by the time everyone gets in flow, I feel more comfortable.
Totally.
Yeah. So if you don't feel it automatically, like you can try to foster it yourself.
Yeah, I love that. I always find that when I'm leading brainstorms, even you can be like a very close group, it's like the first 20 minutes people are warming up and it's hard to avoid, and I have all these exercises I do with people and stuff, but it's like you get cooking like 45 minutes in.
Mm.
So hopefully it's not a 1 hour meeting.
What are these like, exercises
you can do? A bunch of them, even like a crazy eights exercise is like super simple, and you just like fold a piece of paper into eight little quadrants
mm-hmm.
and you have to you have a timer for 1 minute per section. So you have to like write down an idea. So whatever you're like brainstorming or ideating on, it's a way to like get moving quickly and kind of to that point, like not overthinking your ideas or maybe not like being stagnant. It's like you only have a minute, especially with design. Sometimes we're literally like sketching something. So it's like, you can't. Yeah. So it's so fun. But especially if it was just like 8 content ideas or something, it could be like literally anything.
Yeah.
It gets you kind of moving quickly and your brain warmed up. But then it's like the speaking and like sharing that. So we asked them people to like walk through and present them.
I love that. That's really helpful. Fun. We were speaking about this before we hit record, and I'd love your opinion on being a generalist versus a specialist in the workplace, because I feel like there's a strong advocacy for both sides.
Definitely. It's been very top of mind for me. So this is super interesting. As you evolve, there's this pressure to like have an expertise and go really deep and be like such a deep expert on something. But then I also feel like generalists are still so in demand. So I think I started to get self-conscious of my generalist skills. Literally my like last job, my title was like a full stack designer, which is essentially a generalist, which is so funny. Jill of all trades. But I feel like that's an interesting transition to like growing out of these like early years in your career, where it's like often you kind of have to be a generalist because you have all these soft skills and you don't have a ton of deep experience.
Yeah.
But that's where I think I was coming up with these just assumptions that you should find an expertise and continue to develop that to grow in your career.
Yeah.
But it's been really great just meeting with really more senior people at like these really big companies that I've been just trying to like have coffee chats with and connect with. And them just saying like generalists have never been more in demand, especially just like in the society we live in where it is just like so self-taught. Roles are just like bleeding into each other as well. Yeah. And they really appreciate that. And then sadly at where we are with like the economy where it's like if you have less
jobs.
You
gotta wear a lot of hats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like people are more likely to have less people, but more generalists and like maybe be doing less than having these huge teams of super specific expertise.
Every person is so niche down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if you are passionate about one thing, that's okay. You can go really far and really stand out as a specialist in something. Mm-hmm. And that can be like your life's work. Esther Perel, like she can do many things, but like she has her niche. That is what she does. And if you want to go really far, be a specialist. And if you want to go like really wide and have a lot of like rich and nimble experiences, then generalist is the way to go. And I really to be quite self-conscious of the fact that like I did so many things that I'd feel like, is anyone going to take me seriously? Because it's a very traditional old school mentality of like, our parents' generation didn't jump around a lot. They were like lifers at a company, whereas like you just named off so many fucking things that you've done, and I'm like, that's amazing to me. That's not a red flag. That's like, what a wealth of experience. Moving around is great. And I'm also trying to abandon that like traditional old school mentality of, oh well, if she's saying she could do this, she's probably not doing any of those very well. That's not mastery. But companies are hiring, to your point, based on who can get the most done. And it is a double-edged sword, because I think the fact that I have so many skills and am a generalist, it's gotten me a lot of really great opportunities, and I'm really happy about it. I feel like much more confident in my ability to wear all of the hats, and it has resulted in a lot of burnout at times. It's something I have to be careful of. So generally, I'm a big advocate of generalists. However, you need to be a generalist with boundaries, because people will stop seeing the gaps that need to be filled in the team because they will just assume that you can do it all. So at a certain point, I've found that while I can do a lot of things quite well, I have started recently putting my foot down saying, hey, yes, I can film content, but I actually prefer to hire professionals to film the content, and then I will handle like the editing, the packaging, and just trying to push back, because it's like, just because I can do everything doesn't mean I should. And you will get a better result when you get a specialist in certain areas.
I've had the exact same experience. It's really easy to be like walked all over as a generalist.
And
it's actually kind of mind-blowing too. I also feel like it definitely bleeds with my people pleasing background. Well, recovering people pleaser for sure, where it's like, I can do this, yes, put your hand up for everything. Having those boundaries also in ways protects your craft too, because it's like, I don't like doing everything that I can do. And it's important for me to have like some focus, whether it's just like, this is filling my cup, this is what I'm learning and I'm really like honing in this craft, whatever it is. It's like writing is a focus for me, say these next few months on projects. It's like, I want to focus on this and get better at this. And if you're asking me to do all these other things, like that's actually impeding on my like growth and development, not only in my career, but just like as a person. And I think that's been one of my biggest learnings coming out of like being laid off, and just that realization that a company is a company and you're in charge at the end of the day of like your own corporate development as well as like your career generally. And you kind of need to be the one like guardian,
guardianing,
Guardianing. Is that a word?
You should be the guard.
You need to be the
gatekeeper.
You need to guard that.
Yeah. I do notice the more I say yes to everything, the lower the quality can be. So yeah. It's also like I have to maintain a standard for myself that I cannot maintain if I start saying yes to things that I have like a little bit of expertise on. And then it's like, oh shit, now I've got to like learn a bunch of things, get better at doing this whole thing.
Yeah.
I'd be producing better work more efficiently if I just focused on like what my realm of genius is.
Totally. Because I can also find the same thing. And I find that that like eats away at my confidence too. Mm. And then it's the kind of this like negative loop, because then the more I'm doing, I'm not super proud of it because I have just so many things on my plate. I have to get them off.
Yeah. And I feel like that is very reflective of whether you have a good boss that protects time versus just like seeing you being burnt out and like loading more on, and what your team is like. And I wanted to talk about experiences that we've had with bad bosses or bad teams. I wish I could say I've had more good than bad, but really looking back at it, I can't believe how much stress I have had that have come from negative teams that were not kind and, you know, not supportive. And honestly, I can think of two roles at two specific companies that like wanted to see you fail. Like it was a very toxic environment and that just created constant anxiety, constant having to prove myself, just fear of like existing in these environments. And that is no way to thrive. I have also had some really great teams too that I loved dearly. Our team was so close. It was probably like disruptive to be in proximity to us. We would like prank each other. We'd have lunch every single day. We would bring baked goods for each other. We would do like Taco Tuesdays. It was really, really sweet. So I love that team, but bosses are a tricky one.
Yes.
And when I do experience a positive collaboration with a boss or with a client, because right now, since I'm self-employed, I really think of these like quote unquote bosses more as like my clients, and having good experiences with them, it's been like a very emotionally corrective experience, because I'm like, oh my God, this is how it can feel when someone I'm working with books a meeting into my calendar without any context. I don't need to like start getting anxiety that I'm getting fired. And if there's a conflict, I can just discuss it with them rather than having like a week-long panic attack about it.
It's such a tough thing, like finding like culture fits, and even like while you're interviewing and trying to be cautious of that, it can still just be hard. Like people can, you know, be kind or fun enough on just a couple conversations, and once you're there it can be so different. But I also feel like it's like keeping a high standard for yourself too. I mean, the job market has been interesting the last few years, so I think a lot of people will stay at stuff longer than they should just of fear, which I totally get, like, and I've been there too. But it makes such a world of difference, because even I have had like not great bosses but such incredible teams that my experience was not that bad, because I feel like if you have a few like really great people around you, especially like deep, more of like a mentor relationship, or even if you're at the same level but you're really just like, you know, you're in it deep with them and you can be like vulnerable about the experiences with, say, your manager with a project or something like that, and get advice and get help and support, essentially.
Yeah.
That can even like beat out a bad boss, I find. Because
I've
had also like great bosses, terrible bosses, okay bosses. Like I even think some of them, which is why I've like kind of lost my trust in the kind of like management system, just because it's so interesting. Like, I think we thrust a lot of people through to be people managers as their only way of progressing.
100%.
People that should not, like, they're not interested in leadership. They don't even want to do it.
Like, it actually gives me a bit of, like, compassion for them, because they probably fucking don't want to do this.
Yeah.
But it's literally the only way to excel in most industries and companies.
Totally.
Is to manage a team, which is, this can't be right.
Yeah.
So it's a skill in itself. Like, you should just be hiring people managers who are good with people, and then allowing, like, specialists to progress in whatever their 100%. Role is.
Yeah. And I think that's like so overlooked by companies, which is so sad too, because it's like at the end of the day, it's all about people. And if your people are happy, they're going to be doing better work and you will be succeeding more. So I do think more intentionality with like leadership and hiring people that are just like passionate about coaching people through their career and like listening to them, advocating for them, like that is the role of a manager.
Yeah.
The amount of managers we just have is like working managers. It's like, this is your entire workload, plus also these like five people that are going to report into you, and you're now responsible for their entire career growth at the company. I can't imagine. That sounds terrible.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of empathy for all my managers. I can see the why behind them. And even managers that we've been like great friends and stuff, but I'm like, okay, could have been a better like working relationship. Like, we had a lot of fun, but was I set up for success in a lot of these ways? And it's also just like you're humans at the end of the day. So it's like people bring in their crap. So I am now very comfortable with like hard conversations, which I used to run away to the woods. Like,
do you initiate them?
Absolutely hate them. Yeah. And just like I don't get, it's more uncomfortable for me now for things like to go unsaid.
Wow. Good
so
for
it's
you.
Like, let's just talk about this, especially in the corporate world where it's like, it's such a shame if things are missed just because you're like uncomfortable giving me hard feedback or small feedback. That's the thing too. Like even just like not clear communication is so unkind.
Yes.
So
agreed.
And I think that's a huge piece of the management thing too, right? It's like I've had great managers like on paper. It's like they're helping me prioritize and they're helping me get this done. But it's like if there's themes that I'm missing, you need to just be clear with me so I can see that because they have more context into the company. And that's kind of the whole perspective of the manager is like to loop you in on like what's happening with leadership.
And most managers were never trained on being a manager at all. They were just like dumped into a team where they have to like sort it out. But what do you think has made the shitty managers shitty in your experience? Like what are those pieces that were like, wow, that was not good?
Yeah, definitely like communication. Yeah. Like a lack of communication.
Yeah.
I mean, I've even had like pretty bad situations where it's like combative, kind of to your point, where I felt like I was being not even set up for success, but like blamed. Yeah. So that was tough.
That's not fun.
Yeah. And again, it's just like a spiral to what you were saying too, where it's like to be in this place then of like fear and anxiety.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Then you're questioning everything you're doing. You are going to make more mistakes because you're like acting out of this place of like fear.
Yeah. 100%. And you read into things that then aren't even there because you don't. I just did like a mental inventory of all of the bad experiences I've had with like bosses and clients, and it is lack of communication. 100%. Not having those communication skills. And I feel like so much of my anxiety, stress, negativity in past work experiences came from not being on the same page, not proper feedback, not proper communication, getting ghosted at certain times by clients when I was relying on them for my income. Mm-hmm. Like all of these experiences were just like, if we just had a conversation, even if it was like, hey, things are really unstable right now.
Totally.
I think a camaraderie, even like one of my favorite bosses that I've ever had, she was so transparent about everything that it was like, I think some people would have considered it like maybe slightly unhinged, and I fucking loved it. Actually, two female bosses who overshared, and I loved it.
Yeah.
They were just like, listen, I'm not supposed to say this, but here's what's going on, and like here's a bit of context, and it felt like we were in it together. It's truly the difference between like managing down and managing up. These managers were like invested in the team's success. There was vulnerability in a level I think a lot of people are scared to be too personal in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And it has made all the difference in the fucking world to me when I've had managers who've been like, hey guys, there's a lot going on in the world right now. Like I had one manager when the pandemic struck where she was like, if your productivity has to like dip a bit right now because you're like living in fear, or there's like family members that are going through things, just book a meeting with me and let's chat and how can I help you, because I don't expect us all to be like fucking robots right now when the world is on fire.
Totally.
And I never had a boss give that kind of grace or understanding to the fact that like we're actually not robots, like we have lives. If something's off with an employee, rather than coming at them in a combative way, just being like, hey, I've noticed a bit of changes recently, like are you okay, do you want to chat, like what's going on outside of your like productivity and output, I just want to check in on you. And that to me would go so much further just than like, last week you didn't do this thing on time.
Being treated as a human and not just like your output or like an employee or this cold way, which I mean, it's like treat each other as humans, not just another car on the freeway or whatever that is. But especially in something as intimate as working together. To your point, totally, I think is like trust as well. So I think you have to trust each other, which I feel like comes from having at least like, at least humility. It's like, we don't need to be best friends, but like see me as a human and like be kind to me. And if you see that I'm
and
like
assuming
overwhelmed.
Like positive intent from one another.
Totally.
Like we're not against each other.
Because even to your point where it's like these past bosses have like overshared, that's like an element of trust, right? Like you're trust building with them because you're thinking like, oh my gosh, they're not supposed to tell me this, and they are, and I feel looped in. And I also think on the opposite side, the situations that I have felt like least trusting in and definitely had like the worst culture that I've been in have been like, I could tell they weren't just looping me in on things. And then how am I supposed to execute at a high performing role with enough context if I know that I'm not being included in these conversations and I don't know the why as to why we're getting to these decisions. I'm just kind of like dropped these decisions on my plate. And it's like, now execute with these assumptions. And it's like, how do we get here?
Yeah.
What is our goal? Like what's going on behind the scenes?
Yeah.
And if you are isolated in that way and it's just building this trust or distrust and that's like earned, right? Like you can't just go into a
day one. Yeah.
Yeah. Bringing each other along for the ride and treating each other as humans is the easiest way to trust each other.
yeah, you just solved so much for me because I could not figure out why I was so irked by this project I was working on last year. I had a senior role in this startup and I was super involved. And then all of a sudden, big decisions would be made without like looping me in. Even if you want to make a decision and not ask my opinion, at least like explain to me how you got there. And all of a sudden be like, everything's changed. Here's the new direction and here's what's going on. And it would irk me so much because A, I felt like my role was just like a phony role to a degree, because it's like you can't put someone in a position of power and then not give them a seat at any of the tables. Mm-hmm. But I'm realizing from what you said that I think it was a lack of trust. I feel like even if I had no say in the decision, if they had included me in the process, mm-hmm. I would have trusted how we got there and that they would have trusted me. Instead, they operated on a very like need to know basis. Yeah. And it was just like, oh, you don't need to know that. We just need you to execute this. And I'm like, this is need to know for my own ability to feel like I'm part of something, have the full background, and that we can trust each other.
Yeah, I feel like I've been in situations like that before. And I'm like, I guess I don't need to be in these conversations. Like, why am I frustrated about this? And I've like beat myself up about it. But it totally comes back to that. And that's the thing. Even if I'm a fly on the wall for these decisions and things like that, it's like once you're in like a small team executing on something, you're like, I just need to like trust that I agree with exactly why we've gotten here too, right? Yeah. So it's like if you're not given the context and weren't able to see that whole conversation or whatever, and that's where it feels like being excluded but like kind of intentionally, and then you're just left to like execute kind of in isolation, which is just a terrible feeling.
Exactly, because when you're invested in a company or in people or in something, you don't just want to be like the gopher that's just like assigned a task. Yeah. I want to be treated as someone who has like a real stake in this. It makes a difference.
Yeah. And it definitely makes a difference like in teams too. I mean, I had like the most magical team of all the teams at Shopify. We were so close and we still are, which is really sweet. We used to have like lunch together every day. We were the ones causing ruckus. We had like Nerf guns in the office and we sat in the same pod as the marketing team, and they took everything so seriously, and these women would just be like giving us daggers and we're like, hey. Building those deep relationships with the team, like we also did amazing work, and it's because like the camaraderie we had was fantastic. So it's like there was no fear of asking dumb questions. I feel like since then I'm like, oh, I just want to be friends with every team I'm in. And it's like you can be friendly with coworkers and like not have to be best friends with them.
Yeah.
It can be very interesting though, where it's like, are we friends or are we just being friendly?
It's such a mind fuck. And okay, I want to like dive into friendships at work, because I feel like especially when people enter their 30s, it's very hard to meet new friends. And everything I've learned from friendship experts is that proximity plays such a huge role in forming these friendships, especially mm-hmm. in adulthood, like school and like teams and all of these things that expose you to people constantly used to be how you built friendships. And so these days, the only way to meet new people, usually for me, is through work interactions and constant exposure through work. But it has been very confusing to me because I had that like amazing experience of a team I fucking adored and loved, and we were so close. And then because of the pandemic and everyone having kids and moving on, like we drifted, but I still have such fondness for the closeness that I got to mm-hmm. have. Kaylin, obviously everyone knows Kaylin. We met at work. She was my work bestie. She was like, we were inseparable. And mm-hmm. from that work friendship that transcended work and became a best friendship, this podcast was born. So that's so beautiful. But I find now I'm like searching for that, and I confuse and cross lines between proximity and like intimacy, working together with people, especially actually when it's outside of corporate. I think corporate work creates boundaries and like limitations that are made to keep it professional. But I think when you're in a startup together, or you're freelancing with someone, or you're like building a business with someone, it's really hard to separate yourself and your working relationship if you get along from a friendship.
Yeah.
And so it's been hard for me to feel, and my friends have pointed this out, they're like, Jill, you think everyone you work with is like your best friend. And I'm like, I know, but aren't they? And then they're not. I don't want to change that part of me. Man, it's so intimate to create something with someone and be together all the time and be like in each other's insecurities and doubts, and like you're seeing a side that like other people don't get to see from people when you work with them.
Totally.
And so I don't want to close myself off to the fact that like that can be a type of friendship, but I also think it's really devastating when you realize that you were just like a work relationship to someone, and mm-hmm. not even a work friendship, like you were just a employee
working relationship.
You were a working relationship. Yeah. And I was like, but we were friends.
I know. And then I feel like on top of that, it makes it extra hard when you're like a warm person. Like you're going above and beyond, and you're like, oh, like we're joking around more than, you know, just making a joke about this slide deck. Like we're really pals here.
We send each other memes. I got you a Christmas present. What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. Some people just don't take it personally like at all. I have never really had to like move like growing up or anything. I even think that's an interesting metric. So it's like I have like always kept in touch with people from the different phases of my life. Like I moved for university and I lived there for 7 or 8 years and now I'm in a different town, but it's like I still have connections from all of those things. Like I find sometimes that the people that moved when they were like 12 and they never talked to any of those friends again, they kind of treat their chapters of their life like, oh, well, I'm on the next one.
Chapters.
And I don't 100%. Talk to anybody from before.
Yeah.
Which is so interesting to me. I'm like, I'm anxiously attached, obviously. I'm like, I could never leave anybody behind. Everybody's coming with me forever and always, and you're never leaving. So I get hard where I'm like, am I even friends with this person anymore? Like, I could probably stop messaging them. Like, we don't need to keep this going. Yeah. We had fun on the work calls, but
it was great for a season and a reason, and now we can move on.
Yeah, which is hard for us, like, warm people that warm up to people and like to keep it like friendly.
Yeah.
It feels authentic to us. And it's not that it's inauthentic for them, but it's like they're just meeting you in a different way.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not even convinced that you need to drop boundaries. I think in a corporate setting, a boss employee relationship is tough.
Yeah.
Because there are these like power dynamics built in that are difficult and complicated. And I've never been in that situation, to be honest. I've never been like a corporate people manager, but my friends have been like, yeah, it's hard when you're friends with the people that report to you. And so that adds a layer. But if you're all just collaborating on something, I'm like, if you want to be friends, be friends. And I think I just need to get better at accepting that you can have like a very short, brief and sweet friendship.
Yes.
And not everything is forever.
And you can leave that as a LinkedIn connection.
Exactly. You can support each other from afar.
Yes. But even if you're viewing managers as like the employee, which has always been my experience, again, I also haven't been a manager, you're thinking like, you're my connection to leadership, you're my connection to like these projects, you should be seeking out the opportunities that I'm telling you that I'm looking for and setting me up for success and all of these things. But then it's also been interesting talking to my friends as they've become managers too. Once you're a manager, you're split and you're also now advocating for the business goals.
And they also have to manage up and advocate for themselves. So they're like, they're in a sandwich. They're in the middle of a sandwich of like, I need to do well below and above, with an understanding of the business that people who report to them might not have.
Exactly. So it is a tough balance. I don't envy them.
No, I don't either.
I don't think it's
I will continue to frolic around and write poems and make podcasts.
I love that. That's a other topic that I'm very passionate about, which is like the side hustle.
Yes.
And how like empowering that is.
I side hustled for a while before I went full steam ahead. But I think, in this economy, everyone could use a side hustle, because even just a small, like the amount that I'm learning of like passive income is, you got to get the passive income from somewhere. So if your full-time job is being completely used to like pay for your life, your emergency fund, all of those things, and it's like, okay, where do I get the money to invest? So even if it's a small amount, a side hustle can then give you like a little bit of extra stuff to like invest and create passive income. But aside from the financial shit, it can also just give you so much fulfillment. The podcast was like the thing that gave me fulfillment. And it was, it was my side hustle. But like, I could not wait to come home from work and like figure out the branding and figure out our list of dream guests. And if you're doing your job to make money, which a lot of people are, most people are doing, and like, it's probably more rare to have people that are like doing their job for fulfillment.
Yeah.
Then these side hustles can really give you that extra boost of like, I am using my passions and my skills and like making something of them. Getting, you have like, a lot of side hustles too.
I love a good side hustle. But I just love that the element of like entrepreneurship, like building something. I get so much fulfillment and like empowerment. The more I do, the more motivated I am. Like the seasons when I have like the slowest amount of side hustle work, or I'm not creating very much, is when I feel like the least happy. But just like owning something and creating like something from nothing, I feel like it's just one of those magical things that the like industrial revolution of it all, where now we work for these big companies, I feel like it can be this detachment and feeling like, oh, we go to the store and we buy our groceries instead of like making them ourselves. We go to these companies of people that know what they're doing and they pay us money and we do commerce. Where it's like, there's nothing that you can't execute on your own.
And it builds so much confidence.
Totally.
Too. Oh my God. I notice such a difference when I'm having conversations, and there's entire like dinner parties now that are oriented around this. But when you're having a conversation with someone and you don't make it about what they do for work or what their like 9-to-5 is, and you make it about like what they're passionate about, people light up and it's such a richer conversation. Or when I just talk to people who are like doing a 9-to-5, don't really like it, they often seem quite miserable. Versus when I speak to people who are doing a 9-to-5 that they don't really like, And they're like, I am so passionate about this other thing that I do on weekends. I'm so excited about it. I just started being like a dance teacher.
Yeah.
Or I'm just now pursuing my baking dreams on the side. And I like sell sourdough bread every Sunday at the market. Like that's the shit that lights them up. And so it creates like confidence and connections with other people.
When I was laid off at Shopify, I had put so like my identity and my value was in like being a designer at Shopify.
Yeah.
So when that was like stripped away from me one day, I was a mess. I even had side hustles at the time, but I hadn't like been investing enough in myself and the things that I wanted to explore, or even like my own portfolio showcasing that. I really felt like I was only a product of what they had to offer.
Yeah.
And that was tough.
It's funny because I think I understand the idea that working corporate gives you safety.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like very appealing. You get a 9-to-5, you know, when your paychecks are coming, there's safety. But my experience in corporate lacked so much safety. I got, especially because it was in the media industry, I got laid off multiple times. It was rocky. Damn. So to have something that was mine gave me fulfillment, reassurance, confidence, and just like calmed my anxieties that if everything else was taken away, I could still have something that's mine that cannot be taken away.
Totally.
And even if it's not like thriving, it's a seed that I am like growing.
Yeah.
And it's mine.
And you own, like you're in charge of.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think that goes a long way if people are feeling like they're in unstable industries or whatever. If you don't have control over the place that you work for, you can have control over this little pocket that you have of like a side hustle.
Yeah, I love that.
I'm torn on whether I prefer working from home or working from the office. And I know you talk about this a lot on your TikTok, like working from home hacks and how to optimize it. What do you prefer?
Oh, I hate working from home.
Yeah.
Which is how my entire TikTok was born.
Yeah.
I was like, I think it was like 1 year in. And I had spent the first year of 2020 like mostly at home with my parents. Like I had my own house I was like paying rent for and everything.
Yeah.
Just sitting there empty. I'd gotten a puppy, moved in with my parents. Oh. It was like a whirlwind.
Yeah.
So it was like fun for the first 6 months. Then I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So it was about a year in and I was just like losing my mind. I was like, I haven't put on like makeup or like done my hair and like so long.
Yeah.
And it was all these things. It felt like I was coming from a place of like, well, why would I like waste the BB cream today?
Yeah,
what a waste. That. I'm just going to wash it up tonight.
This is like a $90 cream. I'm not going to put it on my face on a day I'm not seeing anyone.
But it got so like deep and existential that I was like, especially, I mean, so sad. I was like 26.
Yeah.
No one saw me in my prime. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is my life. Like I can't just be wishing away my life in this sense or feeling like I'm living in this like simulation where I'm just online, completely a product of like whatever I'm just doing for my job, like being isolated from all these other elements of life that we were in the pandemic. It's a tough balance.
I think the flexibility is key because I went so anti-corporate when I left. I was like, I never want to fucking have to worry about optics again. I never want like to feel like I'm in trouble for not being at work at 9 on the dot.
Yeah.
When I work till like 10 p.m.
Yeah.
And the anxiety that I would feel being late in the mornings, and I was always late in the mornings. Do not get it twisted. I have not been on time a day in my goddamn life. But I was like, the people who are getting there at 9 and leaving at 5 are not working as much as I am getting there at 9:20. And leaving at like 7 or 8, like I worked so hard and I felt like the optics just swallowed me up and just being scared. Did I take too long a lunch? And do I have to ask permission to go to the optometrist or do I just go and hope no one notices? Like, this is fucking ridiculous. We are all adults. And I do think we've progressed past that with, you know, the pandemic did forward the way that people approach flexibility at work. But I just could never go back to that. And I think I like to see the hybrid models that are happening and that there's more flexibility and there's more conversations happening about like 4-day work weeks, working in your optimal time. Do you like, for people with families, do you want to work 8 till 4? For other people, do they want to work like 10 till 6? Like 10 till 6 would be much better for me.
Mm-hmm.
I love working for myself and I do like working from home to a degree, but I would love the option of having somewhere to go and having a community of people because I do think I got a lot more depressed being by myself constantly.
Totally.
And started living in a vacuum, wasn't like taking as good care of myself to your point of just like, well, I'm not leaving the house today. Do I even need to like, I would just work in a robe.
Yeah.
I don't even have work from home clothes. I have my work from home robe. I miss the camaraderie and like the community of going into an office. And I don't know if I should like join a share space or something like East Room. I'm thinking about it, like Soho House or something, because I need somewhere to go other than coffee shops so that I don't lose my mind. Over the past year, I've been trying to like break out of that cycle of never leaving my house. I miss the friendships that are formed by going into a place and being excited to see one another, to like have a work crush.
A new person on the
conference Zoom, call. You just see a little
yeah,
box,
you're like, pin that one.
Who dat?
Who you, cutie? Who dat? Looking like, for the wedding ring, and then there usually was one. Them.
That also added like a real layer of excitement that like I do not have now
totally
in my life.
Yeah, completely. The like energy from it too. I think I always thought it was a very interesting realization in therapy through the pandemic. I always thought I was an introvert because I do power up on alone time.
Yeah.
But then living alone in a pandemic, working from home was very quick for me to realize like, wait, why am I like struggling with this so much? Like I've always really loved my alone time, but having like so much alone time is kind of crazy. And so that's where I've just realized that I'm more of like an amnivert or an omnivert. Yeah. So I kind of am in between where I do recharge, but I also get energy from people as well. With my work specifically, I know I can be like more quote unquote productive, like heads down, getting stuff done.
Yeah.
I also want to like spitball ideas with people or like problem solving, where it's like I can like spin my wheels on problems that I know if I was in office and could just turn to someone beside me and be like, does this make sense to you?
Yeah.
We would probably figure it out in 2 minutes.
I think people honestly got so much shit done in the beginning of the pandemic because it was like you didn't have the commute, you didn't have the coffee dates.
Totally.
Like, people were just like,
everything
machines.
Was closed. Yeah.
Like, you were just literally at your laptop being a machine. But now, especially with like a little ADHD brain that I'm learning about that I have, the buffer of having a deadline of like, I'm leaving the office in 2 hours, I've got 2 hours to get this done, I have a window of productivity to push me. Even though you waste a lot of time going into an office, sometimes it does provide a bit of structure that gets shit done, and it gives me like the incentive to get shit done. In my ideal world, I think brainstorming and creative work would be done in person with the team, maybe 2 days a week. And then the rest of the week would be like heads down, like executing individually.
Totally.
And like that would feel really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that mix. But especially like extending your network beyond the people you work with is really tough. But I've just been like cold LinkedIning people, asking for coffee chats, like at companies that I really admire and people in roles that I admire. And it's actually worked out way better than I'd probably expect. For me, like starting the pandemic at 26, it's like those were peak, working your way up and making those connections. And really nurturing those relationships. Once you're at a certain point in your career, I feel like you get a lot of fulfillment from like mentoring people.
That's true. Yeah.
And like you never know where these like brilliant young people are going to go.
Yeah, you could be working for them one day.
Yeah. Like, I'm cheeky. I'm mysterious.
Just saying.
You never know where I'll go.
You never know. Who knows? I don't.
Please tell me if you do know.
Yeah.
It takes effort. You got to just like push yourself
to do it. That's a hot tip. Don't be turned off by the cold outreach.
Yeah.
Just make it like personal and intentional.
Yeah.
I think in conclusion, work these days is very much a choose your own adventure situation. And we really do, even though it feels like a shitty work climate, like we do have more options than we ever have between self-employment, startups, corporate careers. You can move around. I think a lot of people that I speak to these days are very scared and almost like paralyzed to take the next step and to try something. And what I just keep telling everybody that I talk to is you're not deciding what to do with the rest of your life. You're deciding what to do with the next year of your life. So obviously you want to be strategic. I always love to know that I'm working towards something that's meaningful to me and that I'm appropriately compensated for. But we also don't need to like put all of our eggs in one basket and think that what we're doing in this moment is forever.
Yes.
So as long as it's checking all the boxes of what you need right now and for the next like year, you can always change your mind. You can always do something else. It's just creating momentum, moving forward, and making sure you're doing something that aligns with you, whether that's your financial goals or you're like so fulfilled by the work. There are options out there. So I don't think we have to settle.
It's just, in the words of Frozen 2, the next right thing.
So cute. That's what she said. Thanks for being here and sharing your wonderful experiences.
Of course. It was great to chat.
See you guys next time. There you have it, friends. Thanks for listening, and make sure you're following along on Instagram at teachmehowtoadultmedia and on TikTok at teachmehowtoadult. If you like what you heard today, it would mean so much if you would subscribe and leave a comment or a rating. It really helps us grow the show. And if something in this episode really resonated, text it to your friends or screenshot it and share it on social. Wherever you are in your adulting journey, just remember you're not alone. My DMs are always open and I would love to hear from you. So hit me up with any topics or guests that you would like to hear about. See you next time. Bye!